It is Wednesday, October 13th. My apologies, a day late, a dollar short. Got some COVID stuff going on with my family and my kids. Not me, and fortunately not, well, I guess not fortunately anything. Just got some stuff going on this week that kind of got out of hand. Was supposed to go to the Ole Miss-Tennessee game. I'm still trying to figure out if that's going to happen, but this looks like it's getting more and more unlikely as the COVID strike hits the old Smith household. So, that is what is a little update in my personal life, I guess. I really want to start the show off. Instead of putting an ad read, I'll put an ad read on later. We have one ad read. Just brace yourself, and if you could support them, we appreciate it. But instead of doing that, I want to start this show off with a message that's more important than anything that's going to be said, and it's from Carrie motherfucking Combs. Like a grown-ass man, badass motherfucker. And make sure that my message has been consistent since I started this show, and that's that Carrie Combs is one of the finest human beings that I've met in my professional journey, really in my life, but that is what he is. You talk about a guy that has a mindset and the right lens that he views the world and views his role and views his job and what he gets to do every day and his, you know, how much he is appreciative of what he gets to do for a living and just across the board, a man that you want to live your life in a similar fashion. It is Carrie Combs. I've obviously been critical of him as a D coordinator. He wasn't very good. It is what it was. I mean, we can all point fingers and blame. It doesn't matter why, but I want to play Carrie Combs, his first media availability since being demoted, as he talks about how he approached guys, the adversity, and I get getting demoted, getting fired. I mean, it's something that if you've never been through it on this level, this to this magnitude, on this stage, it is something that is really hard to deal with. And I want you to hear the words straight out of his mouth of how he handled getting demoted as a coordinator at Ohio State.
Picking up your ball and going home, kicking a can down the road, quitting, packing your stuff up, being a miserable human being. If I had done those things, that would make me a liar to every one of those young men that I've coached along the way that had tough times, that got replaced on a given Saturday or a Friday night or a Sunday afternoon and had to have the conversation with, hey, hang in there, it's going to be okay. Whether they agreed with the decision or not didn't matter. You have to battle and fight through those players and young men that struggle with the public criticism and the things that are out there in the world today. If you want to look them in the eye and tell them, hey, you need to hang in there. You need to only don't accept criticism from somebody you wouldn't accept advice from. If you're not willing to stand up and do the same thing, then you're a liar to all those people along life's journey. And so that I'm blessed to work here. And the last piece is this. We talk about the brotherhood around here an awful lot. We talk about it awful lot. And if you believe it and you live it, then when things get tough, it's easy to be a brother when it's 66-17 on a Saturday afternoon. It's hard to be a brother when you face adversity. It's hard. And so if you're here for the other men on this team, the other coaches and the other players on this team, if that's truly what you believe, then you're here with them come heck or high water. You're here fighting and struggling and scrapping. And I love those kids. I love those kids in that locker room. I love those kids on this team. I love the men I work with, and I love Ohio State. And I'm going to be here. I'm going to be fighting and battling and scratching and clawing for the remainder of this season to help us win every freaking Saturday. That's what I'm going to do. And so whether or not I like everything or how everything went, that got nothing to do with it. It's got to do with you got a job to do. You look people in the eye and you say, this is how. And hopefully someday down the road, some young man who had trouble, who faces trouble or adversity can remember an example of a man who tried to lead with positive energy in the midst of adversity. And if I can do that, then I will have accomplished my goal, as long as we are continuing to progress and win on Saturday afternoons.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how you handle adversity right there. You stay true to who you are, right? You can't be a phony, and you absolutely have to just sit back, reflect. He obviously has had some time to reflect and just say, you know what? This is who I am, and that's who I'm going to continue to be no matter what. Like, they may think Carrie Combs is not a good defensive coordinator. He begs to differ. A lot like there's a lot of opinions about me. I know who I am. And Carrie knows who he is. And at the end of the day, you just have to stick to who you are and be who you are and face anything that's thrown at you with your character out front, right? And that's what Carrie did, and it was just phenomenal. And like I said, I've praised Carrie Combs as a man and as an assistant coach and really as a leader of men. He is a leader of men. He's not only a leader of those players, he led coaches. He really did with his messages and even in Bible studies, how he would apply that to real life. Just the way he leads is infectious. And I know all of you felt that in the press conference. I'm here to tell you that is day in, day out, never not the case. That man that you hear in that interview is who Kerry Combs is, and it is what he brings to the table every day at Ohio State. Do I think he's a good D coordinator? I don't. I told you when he got hired, I didn't think it was a good hire in that role to run a defense. Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's right. I don't know, but that's just my opinion. But what no one can ever deviate from is that man's character and the value he brings to a program because of what you just heard, because that is a day in, day out, 24/7, 365 impact on a program. So with all that being said, let's get to the show.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
Goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball. Touchdown, Ohio State, Garrett Olsen.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.
All right, first things first, big news in the latest, I won't even call this cancel culture because it's not, it's just like character being exposed or people's opinions being exposed, right? However you want to look at it, John Gruden is out. So all the people that bet Urban Meyer would be the first coach fired now lost all their money because I guess, is it fired or is it just not going to be the head coach? Because John Gruden technically resigned, which I don't know why he did that. I think he lost money probably doing that unless he got a settlement or something. But either way, John Gruden, there were 650,000 emails that were in this investigation into the Washington Redskins. Yes, the Redskins, not the Washington football team. Fuck you, cancel culture. That is cancel culture. John Gruden is not. But man, 650,000 emails about the Washington football team and their organization, their administrators, all the shit that was going on there with sexual harassment, sexual everything, just a complete train wreck. Nothing has come out about that. The only thing that has come out is John Gruden sent some emails with some racist remarks, which they were racist. I mean, they were, then he had homophobic remarks and yada, yada, yada. And there's a couple points here. First of all, fuck you, media. Fuck you, sports media. Fuck you, NFL. It's absolutely deplorable and despicable how you guys act and the virtue signaling. And I'm not saying John Gruden shouldn't have been fired. He should have been fired. Anyone, and there's no, not only should he have been fired as repercussions and penalties for just having those thoughts and using those words and being a dumbass and putting them in emails, all those things, right? He should be fired for all those. But on top of that, he can't effectively coach a team with minorities on it and with an openly gay player on it. Like, he could not be the head coach anymore. So he needed to be fired for like 10 reasons. But the fact that the NFL and media are going to virtue signal that, like, they put it out there and they will not stand for it. It's like, wait a minute now. You think John Gruden is the only one that said those things, thought those things, or put those things in emails? One, you're an idiot. I mean, we should be digging into Jerry Jones' past, and I mean, some of these rednecks that God knows they probably still are racist, and if they aren't now, if they've learned, they certainly were 10 years ago, especially 10 years ago. I mean, I know it's a bad word. I'm not even going to say it, the F word, not fuck. I'll say fuck. You guys know that. The derogatory homosexual term. 10 years ago, that was used rampantly across this country. Because of ignorance, right? So we're going to fire John Gruden because 10 years ago he used that word. It's kind of like the Kevin Hart couldn't host whatever award show it was because 15 years ago in a stand-up bit, he's going to get canceled. Like 15 years later for being anti-gay or derogatory towards homosexuals. It's just the dumbest shit alive. I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, this is exactly like the Urban Meyer scandal, right? If Urban Meyer needs to go, if he needs to be held accountable, if he needs to be fired, then all these other people that had affairs, they got to go too. Fuck that. I'm with it. We want to have a morally clean sport. Guess what? Half the fucking NFL, they got to go. Can't play in it anymore. A bunch of coaches got to go. If you ever cheated on your wife, whistled at a girl, smacked a girl's butt, said a homosexual joke, or ever said anything racist, you got to go. I'm going to be honest. There's no one left to play. And Aaron Torres, I saw he tweeted, a friend of the program, he tweeted out and he said it best. This Gruden deal reminds him of the FBI probe into college hoops. If the FBI had really done the deep dive into college hoops basically wouldn't exist right now. I wonder how many people would be out of jobs and how many reputations would be ruined if all these emails are released. Because you know, there's so many names in those emails. So many names that did something that will get them cancel cultured. And like I said, John Gruden did not get cancel cultured. The Washington Redskins' name got cancel cultured. Like we could talk about this forever, but just absurd. The hypocrisy that is out in this country with virtue signaling all over the place. Like, we got him. We got the Gruden. It's like, you stupid bitch. There's 20 other ones too. Let's go get them. Fuck that. We're going to hold everyone to the same standard, right? A murder is a murder, right? That's what it is. A crime is a crime. And if it's a crime against social injustice and basic human rights and just, I guess, people's respect and people's social decency, then everybody got to go. We got to clean everybody up. If they made mistakes 10 years ago, fuck them. Got to go. Get them out. Get them out. It's more important. But you won't have an NFL left. That's the problem. Won't have an NFL left. So I had to get my piece out there, just kind of my two cents about Gruden. And before we get into kind of some football stuff, right? I do want to just kind of, I read something that I think is crazy, and I don't know how many people know this, so I'm going to share the story real quick. Just as I kind of try to build this company, I guess, and I people know the background of this show and everything. It started out as just me, just as a way to get, you know, just get stuff off my chest and a hobby, and it's turned into a full-fledged company that I'm trying to figure out how to run and grow. And I want to make it big. I really do. And so I've been doing research into certain companies, and some of these companies blow my mind. And I didn't know if you knew this. How about this? In 2005, three guys started a website called YouTube.com. You ever heard of it? YouTube.com. Everyone uses it nowadays. Shit, I have a channel. We make money on it. It started as an online video dating platform. You could upload videos and find other people that uploaded videos and start. It was like Match.com or Tinder, but with videos. Just that was their plan in 2005, and it failed miserably. And then Janet Jackson got her titty exposed in the Super Bowl halftime show. If you don't remember this, you could Google it. Justin Timberlake ripped her shirt and her titty accidentally got exposed with a perfect little piercing and presented perfectly. Certainly an accident. That happened. And one of these three guys, I should have their names, but I don't really care. He was trying to find the video on the internet. Couldn't find it anywhere. And he's like, damn, there should be a place where these videos go where everyone can go to find it. There was a need in society. There was a void in the internet, in the world, right? There was an opportunity there. And because they paid attention and they wanted to see Janet Jackson's titty, they decided that they had this platform that was magnificently built for video uploads. They were going to transition into a video uploaded user search query website. And then fast forward 13 years, YouTube as an entity generated more than twice the amount of revenue in 2018 than any major single TV network. They brought in $15 billion in revenue compared to NBC's $7 billion, over double. It took 13 years, but they did it. Now, I know as unrealistic and unfathomable right now as that sounds for me and what we're trying to build here, I honest to God want to do that. That's my goal. And I hope we didn't start out as an online video dating platform, but we're going to find our way. And any input or advice you guys have, I would love insight into where you think we could go. We've already went into gambling. We're going to get in athlete development this offseason. We're going to try to expand, grow, and find our niche, starting with raw, real, uncut, unfiltered, no bullshit content. That's what it is. So give me 13 years and I want to rival fucking ESPN. I really do. Might not ever happen, but I'm going to shoot for it. I'm going to take a ton of shit. It's going to take a shit ton of work. I got to get more consistent and the right people and titties. Obviously, Janet Jackson's titty made YouTube. I need some titties. We need lots of titties at Menace to Sports. So feel free to send those in. But cue Rodney Harrington. Show them to me. If you don't know that song, you pull that up on YouTube. There you go. So I just wanted to share that. I thought it was a cool story of just about how you keep working, keep pushing, and things will work out, kind of similar to Kerry Combs' message. So we're about 15 minutes in, and I haven't talked about football yet, so I want to talk about football. And we're going to start with the dumbass sports media personality of the week. None other than old senile, lost his goddamn mind, shouldn't be on TV and shouldn't be talking to you, Lee Corso. Lee Corso on SportsCenter today said, if CJ Stroud hadn't been benched for a game for almost losing to Tulsa, he'd be my Heisman favorite right now. First of all, Lee, you got to get someone, because we know you guys don't write your own points. Get someone to give you something that's fucking valid. Christ. And just retire. Go spend time with your grandkids. We can't take this shit anymore. I mean, game day used to be the tits. Now I'm talking about tits. Used to be the best every morning. Now it's fucking Lee Corso babbling, saying shit that somebody else wrote for him. And whoever wrote it for him clearly doesn't know what they're fucking talking about. CJ Stroud got benched. He didn't get benched. He got rested for 1 week because they said he needed to get healthy. And guess what? I was apprehensive. I was like, bullshit. I think he's soft. Guess what? His numbers, which at the very end of the show, we're going to dive into Ohio State and kind of what team we're seeing now. And CJ Stroud's the main character in that. But what we've seen for 2 weeks, he was injured. He played like average, you know, not average. He played really well at times and inconsistent and missed throws. And so he got rested and now he looks fucking on fire. Like he looks like Pat Mahomes. I mean, just unbelievable throwing the football. So sorry, Lee. He actually got rested because he was injured. It was against a really shitty team that they blew the fuck out and it's reaping dividends for days. So Lee Corso is our dumbass sports media personality of the week. Good job, Lee. Great job, man. Really, really happy for you. We'll send your award in the mail. All right, let's talk about a little football. First, undefeated BYU goes down. RJ Young's going to lose his fucking mind because his tier one, tier two bullshit clickbait is getting all fucked up when teams lose, because ultimately what he's doing, he's not even putting out rankings. He's putting out like categorical teams that haven't lost a game and then ones that have one loss. And so it's like, yeah, RJ, we can fucking put categories on. All right, who's the undefeated teams? That's where they go. Who's the undefeated teams that haven't played anybody? That's where they go. The one loss teams, we can do that on our own. We don't need you to fucking get up there and sound like a douche and do it. But down goes BYU, 26-17, lost to Boise State. The game time guru is probably fired up as a Boise grad. If you don't know him, shout out Shane Larson. But so that's one piece of, I guess, national news. We knew BYU wasn't going to be in the playoffs. But I want to talk about the game of the week. We're going to start with it, right? We're going to end with Ohio State. We're going to, in the middle somewhere, talk about the Red River shootout, how Alabama lost. We're going to start with Penn State, Iowa. You knew that Penn State was fucked from the first drive when the second play of the game, Sean Clifford throws a fucking miserable throw and throws an interception to Iowa. And what did I say before the game? Just don't throw it to Iowa. They lead the country in interceptions, and it's not, they've made some good plays here and there, but most of the time it's just horrific throws and bad quarterback play. And my whole thing was, if Penn State cannot throw it to Iowa, they'll win the game. What'd they throw it to him, 4 or 5 times? Just disgusting. So on the first drive, second play, Sean Clifford throws a pick, and right then and there you should have known this is not going to go well. But the reality is this, and I said it on Twitter right after the game, if Sean Clifford doesn't get hurt in that game, Penn State wins the game. That's just the reality. I know that's part of the game. I know that's part of football. But if Sean Clifford doesn't get hurt, they win the game. And then you look at the biggest reason why. Taquan Roberson came in the game and he just could not run the offense. He couldn't manage it. It was a train wreck. And no more evident than you look at their third down distances, right? When Sean Clifford was the quarterback, their first 6 third downs were 3rd and 5, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 3, 3rd and 3, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 7, like all convertible. When Roberson comes in, 3rd and 14, 3rd and 19, 3rd and 24, 3rd and 29, 3rd and 15, 3rd and 18, like it was fucking an abomination. Once Sean Clifford got hurt, Penn State went 0-for-13 on 3rd and 4th down. Now, some of them were penalties that they didn't convert, but even when they had the penalty, if they ran a play, they didn't convert it, right? When Sean Clifford was in the game, it was 3rd and 5 average. When Roberson was in the game, it was 3rd and 14. Like you go from about, let's say 55% chance to convert on 3rd and 5 to about 10 at 3rd and 14. And that's at best, maybe 6%, 7%. That's just the reality of the sport, right? You have to manage first and second down. And it was once he got hurt, oh my God, how many false starts did Penn State have? Because Roberson didn't clap loud enough. He wasn't running the offense, right? He wasn't driving the ship. And you talk about the difference between COVID and now. Last year with COVID crowds and this year with full crowds, you talk about a home field advantage. Once the fan sees that first false start, there's blood in the water. They yell louder. Those couple people that were checking their phone realize it. Then they start yelling and the decibels go up. It goes just absolutely ballistic. And Penn State had three in a row on third down. It was like third and 14, third and 19, third and 23. It's like, Jesus, can you stop false starting? But no, because he could not run the offense. And the reality is this. He was not ready or prepared to be the quarterback at Penn State. And that is on the coaches. That is on Mike Yurchik, 100%. Your backup has to be ready to at least run the offense. He does, you know, he might not be very good. He might not be great, right? He might not be able to beat Iowa, but at least give him a chance. At least have your cadence and your presence and your management down. Fucking F minus for Mike Yurchik. F minus. And don't get me to the DC yet. That's just the reality of it. For example, in the fourth quarter, if you go around the 5-minute mark, it's fourth down. Right? Roberson thought it was man coverage. It was zone. He throws a fucking ball. It looked like the most undeveloped quarterback play I've seen in the biggest game of the year. That is what separates great coaches from average coaches, right? The Tom Hermans of the world, who I've always said is a good football coach, just a shitbag person. But all of a sudden, you know, Braxton Miller goes down. JT Barrett, they find a way to get him ready, right? JT Barrett breaks his leg. Cardale Jones finds a way to get him ready. Like, you have to have those guys learning and developing, even if they're not the starter. And then when you look at the defenses, I mean, two really good defenses, Penn State and Iowa. Penn State had 8 missed tackles. You talk about who should have won the game. Penn State should have won. Iowa had 11. Iowa and their crowd just dominated that offense, right? Neither quarterback could throw. Don't get me started on Spencer Petras or whatever the fuck you want to call it. Spencer Petras, he was 1 of 2 on deep balls. It was that 44-yard touchdown to Nico Reggiani. And he only threw 5 passes over 10 yards. He was 40% completion. 5 times he threw it past 10 yards, right? I told you before the game, call Penn State DC Brent Pry right now. Call him, email him. If you're a Penn State fan, alumnus, email him and say, you should have fucking listened to Menace to Sports. Spencer only throws the ball in the middle of the field under 10 yards. If you draw a box right now, go stand on the line of scrimmage where the center has the ball, right? And you count 10 yards forward and you draw a box at that 10-yard mark to the hash marks and then straight down to the line of scrimmage. There's a little rectangle, right? That's in the middle of field right fucking in front of you, right? Where my 6th grade son could throw the ball with accuracy to me. This little tiny box, right? If you drew that box, 17 of his 31 throws were in that little box. 12 of his 17 completions were in that little box, right? 71% of the balls that he completed were in that little box. Ridiculous. And don't give me this bullshit. It's play action, blah, blah, blah. It's Iowa. They run the ball. It's play action. That's what fucking ESPN would tell you. No, it isn't. He has a 28% completion percentage on play action. 2 completions for 58 yards. So no, it wasn't. He looked like fucking, but all that being said, he looked like fucking Mahomes compared to Taquan Roberson. Draw that same box from the line of scrimmage to 10 yards, hash to hash. He was 2 for 5 on that box. Roberson was 2 for 5 on those simple as easy as throws. And other than that fucking box, other than that box in the middle of the field that my 6th grader could throw in, Roberson was 0 for 8. Not one completion out of the middle school box. We're going to start calling that the middle school box. He couldn't run the offense. He was rattled and completely shook. Train wreck. Nightmare. I mean, Sean Clifford wasn't outstanding, but he was executing the offense. And that's all they need him to do. I mean, neither offense could run the ball. Iowa, 2.4 yards per carry. Penn State, 3.2. Right? When you talk about moving the ball, period, per play, Penn State was 3.6. Iowa was 4 yards per play. You look at third down. Penn State, 5 of 16. They were 5 for 6 with Clifford, mind you. Iowa was 7 of 19. Not a great percentage. I think the real storyline here is I've maybe undervalued Matt Hankins and Riley Moss. I'm not going to say that. The quarterback play was so bad, I get a free pass because Jahan Dotson was 0 for 3 against the duo corners at Iowa, and he had 1 catch on 6 attempts over 10 yards, 4 catches on 13 attempts past the line of scrimmage. He only had 28 yards on throws that crossed the line of scrimmage. He was a non-factor because the quarterback couldn't get him the damn ball. I've seen all over social media, Penn State fans want a rematch. They want a rematch, right? It's going to be tough to get a rematch against Iowa because they got to go at Ohio State on Halloween. They have Michigan at home on November 13th and at Michigan State on Thanksgiving. So 2 holiday games and November 13th, Michigan at home. Chances of them going 3-0 in those games, I'm saying 10% at best. At best. With Sean Clifford, this offense is average as the day is long. They have an average-ass run game. They have one good receiver. I kind of like their tight end, but the quarterbacks can't get it to their receiver. Sean Clifford's in. He's going to get it to Jahan Dotson a little bit, and they got a chance to be a little dangerous, right? If he's not in the game, good luck. You're going to go 0-3 in those games. Rematch, you better fucking worry about whoever you got this week. I should look. I'll tell you this much, though. If Ohio State loses to Penn State, what a weekend Thanksgiving will be with the East in limbo, with the rivalry game between the team up north and Ohio State, and then Michigan State, Penn State in East Lansing, both in the state of Michigan. You talk about a huge weekend for the state of Michigan. I'm going to call my guy Mad Dog DeMarco, and we're going to have to throw an event. What are we talking about? That'll be the biggest weekend in the history of Michigan collegiate sports. Both in state, it'll be wild. So anyways, wanted to talk about that game. Before we get to, I'm going to jump to my bookie. If you guys please could, just go on there, sign up, just do me a favor, check them out, see how their websites run, because if you guys support them, they continue to support us. Jump on there, get that free money, deposit a little bit, play one of their bets that they're going to tell you about, and then we appreciate it. So we'll get a quick word from MyBookie. Where you're betting is just as important as who you are betting on. That's why I always tell people to put your money down at MyBookie. The Arizona Cardinals have come out to a hot start. The Chiefs have as many losses as they did last year. And with all the overs hitting in the dying seconds of a game, there's never been a better time to get in on the action. Thankfully, MyBookie's lock of the season has returned for the Las Vegas-Seattle NHL opening night game. And when either team scores in the game, you win. You heard right. When the lamp lights red, you get the bread. Take the easy win, pat yourself on the back, and use your winnings towards your NFL picks for Week 6, which includes a battle between two potential Super Bowl contenders when the Cardinals meet the Browns. Don't miss out on a winning season. Head to MyBookie and use promo code MENACE, and you'll get double your first deposit. That's promo code MENACE, so you can double your funds to double your winnings. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Think about it. You get free money, and if either Las Vegas or Seattle scores an opening night of the NHL, you win that bet. Take that money, use promo code MENACE, and bet with MyBookie. There you go. Check them out for me, even if you don't want to gamble. Just try it out. So check it out. I promise you'll enjoy it. It's a good deal. Appreciate MyBookie. All right, let's get back to the landscape. Another Big Ten game, Michigan. The Jim Harbaugh Wolverines roll into Nebraska and survive. Man, it was a close game. And Vegas told you, right? Michigan was favored by 3. What'd they win by? 3 or 4? I don't have it in front of me. Either way, they survived Nebraska at Nebraska. And I'm going to be honest with you. Right now, looking at this schedule, at Nebraska might be a decent test for Ohio State. I'm not saying that Nebraska can play with Ohio State. Just trust me on this one. That is not going to be an easy game. Because there is, whether you believe it or not, there is momentum in Omaha or in Nebraska right now. Lincoln, Nebraska. There's momentum. I know they've lost some games, close games, but there's momentum. And here's what happened in that game. First of all, missed tackles tell the story, right? Nebraska had 12, Michigan had 4. The reality is, if Nebraska tackles better, they might win that game. Michigan had 4 missed tackles. That's excellent. That's amazing. The moral of this game was Michigan looked decent on defense. Decent. Bend but don't break. Right? They tackled well. They held Nebraska to 3 for 11 on third down, which means they eventually got off the field. So you can stat read all you want about yards and all that other stuff. What they did was they tackled well. When you watch the film, they tackled well. They bent but didn't break. And when it came to money down, third down, they got off the field. That's just it. Nebraska didn't tackle well and turned it over twice. And that's why they lost. There it is. I can go through everything else, which I'm going to. But that is why that's why the result was the result. That's why Nebraska didn't pull off the upset. Cade McNamara, still not impressed. Still got to see him do something, right? He threw 10 balls over 10 yards, 3 for 10, 30%. 30% of his completions or of his balls over 10 yards were complete. That's not going to beat anyone. Worth a shit, right? That's not going to beat Ohio State. It's not going to beat Michigan State. Not going to beat Penn State. Sorry. 19 for 24 under 10 plus screens. So he was almost 80% at the quick game throws and screens. He dinks and dunks. This Michigan offense dinks and dunks. They have a really good run game. I like Hassan Haskins a lot. It's more Jim Harbaugh-esque, more Stanford-esque than it has been in the last year or two. But Cade McNamara, not impressed still. 65% completion percentage versus base defense, not high enough if you're an elite quarterback, and 40% versus blitz, not at all. The one thing that he's got going for him, which isn't translating in numbers, is zero drops. If Ohio State had the sure-handedness that Michigan has right now, C.J. Stroud would be putting up even more astronomical numbers. I still believe this Michigan offense is a phony. I haven't seen anything that makes me believe they're not. Are they better than they've been in years past? Yes, they are. But they're not equipped to run the table and beat teams on the upper tier, the R.J. Young's upper tier of college football. They're not. They're not equipped to run the table. They're not. Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum ran the ball well. They're clearly the strength of this Harbaugh offense, right? Haskins, I think he had 120 yards on 21 carries, two touchdowns. Corum, 13 for 90 and one touchdown. But I'm just telling you, I wanted to give you my quick opinion on it. This Michigan team on offense is a phony. Their defense is... I really like. They're playing with good fundamentals. They play hard. I like their multiplicity. They tackle well. You know, I think the Michigan defense is their strength. This offense and Cade McNamara are not. The skill on the perimeter are not. They just aren't. So that's my opinion of that game. And that's my opinion of Michigan. Just the reality of it. But going down south a little bit to the Red River Shootout. Oklahoma versus Texas. And man, let me take a deep breath for this one. Spencer Rattler the Bitch. That's his new name, Bitch Rattler. It's just what he is. If you watch the documentary on the QB1 documentary, fucking asshole. Talking shit to his, you know, he's a high school team, right? This kid's a blue chip, number one quarterback in the country, playing with some other high school kids. I mean, they were good players. They weren't elite players. They were good players. And he is just dogging them like, you suck. My receivers suck. He's like, you don't ever get open. You can't catch. Like, just being an asshole to all of them instead of trying to be a leader. And the one kid even called him out. I mean, just a dickhead. Like, you don't want to like this kid. Never mind the stupid fucking bleach haircut and the little pouty bitch face that he has. He's just, what he did was he created his persona in the role of the villain. And if you're going to embody the role of the villain, you better ball out. And guess what? He didn't ball out. He pouted and walked off. He didn't even celebrate the win. Like a little bitch. Took his ball and went home. The opposite of what Kerry Combs said to do. I can't stand this kid the more I watch him. And I'm going to get to it. I'll get to it in a minute. I'm going to get ahead of myself. But then, Holly Rowe goes to interview Caleb Williams after he comes in the second half and single-handedly wins the game. She goes to interview him, and Lincoln Riley refused, stopped her, told her no. I don't care about some policy about freshmen. I'm not here to hear that excuse on a Monday or Tuesday after you thought about it. That was you trying to do one thing. Protect your cancerous little bitch player, Spencer Rattler. That's what you were trying to do. Because you knew if Caleb Williams was getting all this praise, all this glory, it would Oklahoma fans would be buying his jersey, sayonara, Spencer Rattler, and you weren't ready to make that call, so you didn't let this kid own his moment and enjoy his moment. Shame on you, Lincoln Riley. That's ridiculous. And you know what? I've seen it before. It was with Urban Meyer and Percy Harvin. You get a guy that is infecting your team, the culture, right? Percy's not a bad guy. He just had some issues. And Urban let his issues supersede the team. And then the team was infected. There was dissension and divisions. And the culture was fractured. And then Urban had a heart attack, right? We all know the story. That's what happened. Lincoln Riley is allowing this kid to fracture his team's culture. And we've seen it for 2 years now. Why isn't Oklahoma playing like when they had Jalen Hurts, Kyler Murray, and Baker Mayfield? Why? Because of the guy they're allowing to have the keys to their kingdom, right? They're allowing to have him to have the wheel on the ship and drive it. And that is entirely on Lincoln Riley. Let's talk about on the field. How'd the old bitch Rattler do? Spencer, how'd you do, Spence? 5 passes attempted over 10 yards. Now, he got pulled at halftime. 5 over 10 yards. 40% completion. So he completed 2 of the 5. Well, 3 of the 5, if you want to count the one he threw to Texas, the interception. So 3 of them did not hit the ground. 1 of them was to the wrong team. Whoops. And then when he wasn't pressured at all, right? No pressure. Great protection. Whether it was blitz or base defense, doesn't matter. They picked it up. He's not pressured. He completed 5 of 10 balls for 37 yards and an interception. What a fucking dynamic guy, QB1, Spencer Rattler. He was benched. Oklahoma's down 38-20 at half. Benched. Sit him on a bench. Lincoln Riley's got to win a game, right? Brings in Caleb Williams, the highly touted freshman. And what does he do? 6 second half scoring drives, 300 total yards in a half, 64% completion percentage for 212 yards passing, 2 passing touchdowns, 4 rushes for 88 yards and another touchdown. That's 22 yards a carry, 73 of them after contact. I am sick and tired of coaches and analysts and everyone jerking off quarterbacks based on arm talent. This kid was supposed to be the number one quarterback in the draft, they told me. That's what Mel Kiper said. The quarterback position is not just about, can you throw it well? Like, are you tall and big with a strong arm? Are you accurate? Spencer Rattler is all those things in the right environment. It's about intangibles. It's about charisma. It's about leadership. It's about after a loss. You know what it's about? You watch some of the, you watch Jalen Hurts when Tua Tagovailoa replaced him. He was amazing. And that's how you knew, like, that kid is going to be, he's going to start in the NFL. And where's he at now? Starting in the NFL. You saw it with JT Barrett. Now, he didn't have the arm strength and talent for the NFL, but Cardale Jones is the quarterback. JT is supporting, right? Supporting him. And it's just, that's what the quarterback position is. It always has been. I heard Bill Belichick talk in 2005 when I was 21 years old, and he said that, and it stuck with me forever. I think it was all the way down to number 5 or 6 on his bullet list or priority list of quarterbacks. I think it was 5 or 6 was arm talent. The top 4 were all, 4 or 5 were all intangibles. The other side of the ball, Christ. I thought these defenses were a little improved, but my God, Big 12 defenses are going to Big 12 defense, I guess. 36 missed tackles combined in the game, 1,178 yards, 103 total points. I mean, woo! And I'm going to tell you what, Oklahoma won the game because of Caleb Williams and on the ground, and I take back all the Kennedy Brooks slander I spewed. A couple people came back at me on Twitter, and I was like, that's fine, I'll wait till I see it. Well, I saw it, motherfucker, I saw it. The team as a whole, 340 yards for 8.3 yards per carry. Kennedy Brooks, 217 yards, 2 touchdowns, 85% of those yards, 184 of those yards came after contact. He forced 10 missed tackles. I mean, that sumbitch is a dude, and I apologize. I'll admit when I'm wrong. He was a dude. So Oklahoma racked up a 25-7 fourth quarter to win by 7. Steve Sarkisian almost had his marquee upset win in year one, but Oklahoma lives to see another day. And all I'm going to tell you about Oklahoma is they're a mighty different team with a different quarterback. I'm going to tell you what, that second half, I'm watching them like, yeah, this looks like a dynamic Oklahoma offense. And if their defense, I mean, their defense has been playing better. This game was an anomaly, we hope, if you're an Oklahoma fan. So that's the game. That's what happened. And Spencer Rattler, sayonara, bro. See you in the fucking AFL. Go play for like the Columbus Destroyers if we still have a team. I think we do, don't we? But that is the Red River Shootout from my perspective. To the upset of the week. If you haven't been listening to Menace to Sports, you were shocked when Alabama loses 41-38 to A&M. I've been saying it forever. This Alabama team is a phony. And it's not a phony. They're a really good team. But they're not the Alabama of old, right? They're not the Alabama we're used to. They're not last year's Alabama or the year before that. It's one of the weakest Alabama teams that I've seen from Nick Saban in a decade, honestly. But how about that? The first assistant coach to beat Little Nicky. Have you ever seen the Adam Sandler movie, Little Nicky? It's awful. Awful movie. But Nick Saban reminds me of Little Nicky, the devil's son, right? So I'm going to call him that from now on, Little Nicky. Jimbo Fisher, the first assistant ever to beat Little Nicky. And I'm going to tell you why. Why Alabama lost. First of all, the first thing is always 2 turnovers to 1. A&M had an extra possession. It was a 1-possession game. A&M had an extra possession. Can't do that. And you know what else? They had the better quarterback on that day. Heisman frontrunner Bryce Young. Let's look at him and compare him to Zach Calzada. Over 10 yards. Bryce Young, 6 for 19, 32%. Calzada, 69%. I'm sorry, that's over 10 yards. Deep balls, Bryce Young was 1 for 5, 20%. Calzada, 3 for 5. Alabama had 6 drops. A&M had 1. It wasn't that Calzada had better stats. He actually had similar stats or slightly lower stats, but it was how he got those stats, how he operated the offense, how he marched it down the field, right? Under pressure, Zach Calzada was 9 of 13, 70% completion with 2 touchdowns and an interception. Bama had to get away from pressure They only pressured him 14 times in the game compared to 24 times A&M pressured Bryce Young. They had to get away from pressure because he was eating that shit up. He's under pressure, 70% completion, 2 touchdowns, no picks. He's dicing it. You can't keep pressuring him. You got to get out of it. He was making them pay when they pressured. Now, I will say this, and I don't know. I said it a year ago. I said it preseason. I've said it every week. Jameson Williams is their lone threat on offense. Now, Brian Robinson Jr. is really good, the run game. I'm talking about the throw game. Jameson Williams is a stud. He's their lone threat. 10 receptions on 12 targets, 146 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 drops. John Mechie, he's just a guy. He's not like those other guys. I've been saying it for weeks. Now do we believe it? He had 3 drops in this game, seven catches on 12 targets, so 5 times they couldn't connect to him, 65% receiving grade on the year. He's only had 1 touchdown since week one. He only has 2 on the year. He had 1 against Miami week one, and he's only had 1 since then. So this guy is not, let's not try to compare Alabama's skill to Ohio State's. Jameson Williams is a fucking dog. He is really good. But that's just the reality of what happened. And this, I'm not going to go through the analytics. I want to get to Ohio State in a minute. But the defense is just average, too. They're just average. They don't have a great pass defense. They're not the typical Nick Saban, like, punch you in the mouth rush defense. This Bama team is going to lose another game. I don't know how loud I got to say it. I appreciate everybody that tweeted after they lost. Like, Coach Zach Smith has been saying this all year. And when they lose another one, say he called it again. Because, like, this team is going to lose again. It might even be to an Auburn, a team you're like, what the – really? I mean, and obviously it could be Georgia in the SEC championship game, but they're going to lose another one. Watch out. But you look at the SEC West, man, it is a mess. There's 4 1-loss teams in conference losses, 4 of them. Bama, Ole Miss, Auburn, Mississippi State. Bama, Auburn, and Mississippi State control their destiny because they still play each other, right? Ole Miss needs a Bama loss. Bama has at Mississippi State this weekend, Arkansas at home on 11-20, and the Iron Bowl at Auburn on Thanksgiving. Can you imagine? Thanksgiving might be primed to be a huge weekend. So will Bama even win the West is my question. Or will Mississippi State, Auburn, or Arkansas throw them an upset? Or maybe Tennessee. Shout out to my dude Caleb. Maybe Tennessee will do it. Well, let's talk about the Buckeyes. I'm not going to go through the entire first game. I'm just going to talk about what I saw and kind of the developments in the offense, right? First of all, Emeka Egbuka in the return game. Holy shit. About time. 4 returns, 166 yards, 41 and a half yards per return. That's the highest that Ohio State's had since 2011 versus Colorado with that long 67-yarder to really pad the stats. I guess he heard the show when I was pissed about Jameson Williams returning kickoffs and said Ohio State's, I mean, an idiot because they haven't had a returner in 10 years. Well, here he is. He showed up. That was awesome. And let's just talk about what I saw on offense, right? First thing I saw, the under center packages are awesome. They're expanding. I was talking a lot about how they needed more play actions for CJ Stroud to get guys more open. Sure enough, under center, hard play action, guys are running butt naked. It was beautiful. And the other thing is, CJ Stroud wasn't overthrowing it. If you really look at the deep dive analytics, right, was he hurt or was he not hurt? You look at the analytics. You look at the first 3 games versus the last 2 games. The first of all, PFF grade, since Akron, he has a 90% grade on offense. Before Akron, a 75% grade. So I don't put a lot of weight in those, but that tells you something, right? It's got to be at least close to right. How about deep balls? First 3 games, 39% on deep balls. The last 2 games, he's hitting on 71% of deep balls. Oh, how about throws over 10 yards, right? First 3 games, 50%. Last 2, 55%. Slight improvement. Now, let's talk about let's compare the first 3 games versus the last 2 games in a couple categories. How about when he's kept clean? When CJ Stroud is kept clean, right? His percentage of completion was in the first 3 games, 66%. In the last 2, 77%, an increase of 11 percentage points. The biggest one, he also improved in versus base defense. If a team runs base defense, 4-man rush. First 3 games, he was at 67% completion. Now he's at 72% completion. But where CJ Stroud has improved the most and what he needed to do, I talked about it all year before the rest week. He needed to make teams pay when they blitzed. In the first 3 games, he only hit 56% of throws versus blitz coverage. In the last 2 games, from 56% up to 75%. He's getting there. He's getting there. We're seeing improvement. He's not overthrowing balls. He's putting touch on the ball a little bit. You don't see him trying to muscle throws. You see him throwing with touch, firm touch throws that are pinpoint accurate. And then he's got guys like Chris Olave on the post route making a ridiculous adjustment on a bad ball to catch it for a touchdown. I mean, he's got guys bailing him out also. But he also had drops in this game. There also was drops. But on to the other star of the offense, Travion Henderson. And here's my Travion Henderson fun facts. Call it a Heisman campaign if you want. Fun facts. Travion Henderson leads the country in runs that are over 30 yards. He has 6 of them. He also leads the country in runs that are over 40 yards, 5 of them. He has 6 runs over 30 yards already halfway through the year. That's absurd. He's 4th in the country at 8.7 yards per carry. He's 17th in the country with forcing 27 missed tackles. So he's forced 27 missed tackles already, right? Number 1 in the country in missed tackles forced are two guys that you will know if you don't, are tied, Kenneth Walker and Bijan Robinson at Texas, the former Ohio State commit. They forced 60. Now they've had far more carries than Travion. With equal carries, he would have forced, on average, 48 missed tackles. So he'd be right in that ballpark. He's the number 5 running back in Power 5 with 315 breakaway yards, meaning explosive runs. He's the only running back in that top 5 with under 75 carries. So long story short, this fucking kid's having a year. I mean, a year for a freshman. He's on pace right now in regular season with the championship game to finish with 1,326 yards and 20 touchdowns. And all of this is with 2 attempts for 15 yards versus Minnesota and only 54 yards against Oregon. I fucking told you he should have started game 1, didn't I? Tony Alford. I'm just kidding. But you know what? Kids balling. I mean, crushing it. And he's got some good rush defenses coming down the pipe here in Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State. He's going to really have to show up. And if he can do it against them, he's in the conversation. And he's only a freshman. Can you imagine? This is what Penn State fans felt like when they had Saquon as a freshman. They're like, we get this for 2 more years? Yep. Yeah, you do. Now, the defense, whole nother story. 25 missed tackles. I know you're going to look at the score and see an interception here and there and think it was great. 25 missed tackles. So sloppy. I mean, and I usually look at it. They had a bunch of missed tackles against Rutgers, but it was mostly younger guys. This was starters. Multiple missed tackles. Cody Simon, Lathan Ransom, Cam Martinez, Zach Harrison, Ronnie Hickman, 7 Banks. Starters with multiple missed tackles. You can't have it. And then coverage. Cam Martinez allowed 3 catches on 3 targets, 63 yards. Ronnie Hickman, 4 for 4, 40 yards. And I'm going to tell you this right now. I feel like it's Tough Borland. I feel like I'm racist because it was Tough Borland. Now it's Tommy Eichenberg. But my God, man, he's as lost as I've ever seen a linebacker in coverage. Like, Tough Borland couldn't physically do it. He wasn't talented enough. Tommy Eichenberg, I don't even know if he's talented enough because he's so fucking lost. Their first touchdown, it's a sprint out in zone coverage. He just sees the guy sprinting out and he's like a fucking dog that sees a tennis ball and he just goes after the quarterback and abandons his zone and the coverage doesn't have time to push over and they just hit him for a nice, easy touchdown. Another time on 3rd or 4th down, it's man coverage and it's a naked. He's got him covered and the quarterback's rolling out and he's like, ball, ball, ball. And he just goes after the quarterback like, Christ, man, take a fucking chill pill and do your job. So that was disappointing. Now the positives, I'll tell you this much. The scheme is totally different. Totally different. What Matt Barnes is doing, a lot of 2 high coverages, a lot of cloud cover too. Holy shit, I haven't seen that at Ohio State in years, except for like 3rd and extra long. Cloud cover 2 on 3rd and 4. Fucking wild, but I love it. They're playing 2 high coverages, 1 high coverages, combination coverages where they play, it looks like cover 2, but the corner to the boundary is locked in man. They're rotating safeties. I'm sitting here with like a hard on, like, thank God, man. This is what I'm talking about. We're just getting diced up by Alabama and Oregon, and it's like, what are we doing just sitting there? Now we're multiple. We're disguising. It's beautiful. The other thing, Steel Chambers looks like he is a fucking dude. He's really coming. And I said it early in the year, like, this kid's got it. Play him more, right? He had played the most snaps by a linebacker at 39 snaps. So Steel Chambers, a wildly welcome, I guess, something just to watch. Buckeye Nation is so excited for you, Steel, because we've needed it. They've needed it. And then how about Marcus Williamson? Snap count. He played, he averaged 20 snaps the last 3 games, right? Until this game, and he played 48 snaps. They're trying to get a more athletic group on the field. You love to see it. You love it for Marcus, and they need it. They need it. And then the D-line was really good. Zach Harrison still doesn't impress me, but I'm going to tell you what. JTT is a man, and so is Javonte Jean-Baptiste. It's like, it's just, they both are really, really good. They're really, really dynamic pass rushing and Zach Harrison's pretty good too, but I just want to know, are you down with JTD and JJB? That's the question. Because this D-line needs those two to be dominant. Jack Sawyer played a lot. Really, really a good. I mean, it was a good game. It was a great game. Like I say, I'm always the negative Nancy for Buckeye fans because I tell you what I saw that I didn't like. But that's just how you win a championship, right? You have to identify, even in a game. Like Kerry Combs said, it's easy to be a fan when it's 66 to whatever. That's easy to say the Buckeyes are dominant. They're going to win it all. I'm like, okay. I'm with you. They look really fucking good now. They finally got it going. Let's talk about how they can win it all. Because now I think they might have a chance, right? I'm still not sold that they're going to run the table in the Big Ten and win the Big Ten championship and not lose another game. But if they keep improving, it's possible. So I want to talk about how. What do we need to do that, right? That's what I'm here for. So, anyways, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. Got another show coming either tomorrow or Friday. We'll figure it out. With a bye week, we'll get that show out and then back in action as we go game week Indiana next week for the Buckeyes and the Midwest brand. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. I will catch you next episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're entertained. And if you were not or did not, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
Watches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown, Ohio State.
Why am I talking to you? You're not even in football.
Yeah.
Did you even play to the high school level? You took journalism. It's a bunch of nerds interrupting people who know what they're doing.
It goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. And Indiana wins.
The commissioner could literally punt a baby with his wingtips on. I'm still going to watch on Sunday.
Looking for the deep ball.
I don't condone the man's actions, but it's football. I have to watch it. This is all I have.
On first down, it's Breece Hall. He doesn't go down. He might go all the way. He stays on his feet again and scores.
I wasn't going to hit a woman, but then that guy in the Ravens did it, so I guess it's okay.